Yes, sir. Gary Lewis and the Playboys on Saturday morning. That one got stuck in my head during the week. And I told my wife Thursday night, I said, I'm playing that on the radio first thing Saturday morning. So there, now there's no correlation between anything here, but Jim Dill is here. Jim is here to talk about Bucks. Good morning. It's good,
good
to have
morning.
You back.
Yes,
it's the season already. It just rapidly, we're the older we get, it just goes faster.
It does go faster. That's what people say. You know, it's just each month's a smaller part of your life the older you get. So that's why it seems to go faster, I guess.
Oh, okay. I like that. That's good. So I've seen a lot of TikTok on the news. You know, I think maybe if they have a slow day, let's talk about ticks.
Well, you know, the ticks is a never-ending problem. It's not going to go away in the near future. Numbers are increasing. Diseases related to ticks have been on the increase. So it's going to be a great time, so to speak, to be doing tick work.
Yeah,
so, yeah.
And it's a growth industry, is what it is.
It's definitely a growth, and the problem becomes there's new ticks out there all the time on the horizon that are moving. You know, we have our eyes out for a couple of new species. One, the Lone Star tick, which we've talked about before, isn't established here, but occasionally we find it here. So we're assuming a lot of times it's brought in maybe on a bird or something, and then eventually gets on a person. But we haven't found it established.
But these critters didn't survive. I'm sure they've over eons now that they've had the opportunity to be mobile and get into our area. But the climate was not conducive to them surviving.
I think what really we're seeing is, you know, even though I'm sure people would argue, but I think you have shorter winters. They may not be any less brutal, but they're shorter for the most part. You know, I mean, growing up as a kid, I mean, I remember trick-or-treating on Halloween, you know, and there'd be snow on the ground easily, almost every time or many times. Now, you know, you can go to Christmas and, you know, I'm out there raking leaves still. It's shortened up. But, I mean, still just as brutally cold and as much snow. But because of the longer season, it's allowed things to come in, survive, reproduce. And as I said before, we've done, you know, some observations, if you would, of temperatures. And, you know, you got 12, 15 inches of snow. You put thermometers or probes at the ground level underneath that snow, and the temperature outside is, you know, zero or less, and it's like 30 degrees at that ground temperature. So they can survive quite well. And you get down into that leaf duff a little bit, which is, of course, decaying, and that gives off heat, so it's probably even warmer. So they're sitting there fat and happy with, you know, as long as there's a good snow cover. If you had a good cold winter without snow cover, I think it would probably hurt the tick population. But we have ticks sent in 12 months of the year. So once it gets to, you know, 40 degrees or sometimes even a little cooler, they'll get out, and as long as there's no snow or very little snow, they'll be out there questing, and, you know, people will come in contact with them and send them in to us.
Okay.
So
thanks, Jim. I feel better.
Ticks, ongoing thing.
Yeah,
ticks is one of those things. And also, we've been getting a lot of calls lately. Of course, it's fall, and the ladybugs are coming in. The cluster flies are, you know, bouncing around. The western conifer seed bugs are
the seed bug. That's I was visiting my son last week, and he referred to them as weevils. And I told my wife, I said, and I couldn't quite. I had the conifer part. Western conifer
seed bug. Yeah, and that's what they do. They feed on the seeds of mainly white pine for here in this state. They'll feed on other things. So we often find if you have pines around your house, you're probably going to have the western conifer seed bug as a winter guest.
Yeah. Oh, you know what? That reminds me. During the break, I've got to show you a picture of a spider. I was cleaning a car, and it was out, or I was working on a car. It was outside the car, and it was this big honking brown spider with had a little decoration on its back. And I looked online. I wasn't able to define what it was, but and I hadn't even planned to. I think it's still on the phone. If it is, We'll look at it during the break, and then we can share with everybody what the... unfortunately, the spider did not survive. I hate to say that, but it just didn't quite make it. I'm not sure what happened to it, but it was gone.
I'm guessing something probably fell on it.
I think it was maybe a size 13 something. I'm not sure what it was.
But
our phone number is 1-800-966-1039. We've got the text line up and running, 601-207-4478, if you'd like to... touch base with Jim this morning about a bug issue that you may be dealing with.
Right.
My son is Pete's going to call in second hour, and he's got something about the ant apocalypse that he wants to discuss, I think. But I've suggested to a few folks who have had ant issues to go around the house with or building with the borer team,
mm-hmm.
and they've been pretty pleased with the results on that.
Yeah.
We did a our office over in where we've moved to, and opened up the walls to re-insulate because we knew there was some rot in the walls, unrelated, well, maybe related, and we found infestations of ants.
Yeah.
And it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, a lot of times wet wood is where carpenter ants get established because that's what they like to nest in. And once you get those in, of course, it's can be a real problem.
Yeah.
They can do a lot of damage.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's where they like wet wood. So when people have carpenter ant problems, that's what we always tell them to look for is, you know, overhangs or, you know, gutters that may be leaking.
Yeah.
The big place is it seems to be decks with sliding glass doors for some reason. I guess water puddles up there. And,
yep.
You know, at
well, this
interface.
One, the slab was bigger than the building. I don't understand if you put a slab and if you make it a little bit too big, put the building so it sheds water.
Yep.
You know, but there was about an inch and a half of slab before you hit the wall.
Yeah.
And excuse me, that whole sill had just got taken out over time.
Yeah. And just the water just sets
and
there.
They and thought, that's a smorgasbord.
They like to.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what. We're going to take a break. It's 8:15. It's Voice of Maine. It's hot and cold. And we'll be back in a bit. Jim Dill's here. And we're going to talk bugs for 2 hours.
Count them. Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. We're back with Jim Dill. It's Saturday morning. It's hot and cold. And we're talking bugs, and during the break, Jim was able to diagnose my spider.
Yes.
And it was a...
Cross orb weaver.
Cross orb weaver.
Yeah.
It was a big, juicy spider.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was probably female getting ready to lay her eggs right there in your car someplace.
Well, it was outside the car, I just want to be clear to people in Radio Land, I don't sell cars with spiders in them, okay? And if there were any critters, they would be gone.
Right.
But it was outside, and it was. As a matter of fact, it was. It had already started to build a very nice
web. Yeah. Just looking for another meal, and you know, especially this time of year, they're really, really fat and juicy because the females are full of eggs and they're getting ready to lay their egg sacs. So,
And we got a bunch of phone calls. I just have to ask you real quick. History Channel's got a show of people who are going to allow themselves to be bit by different critters, tarantulas, spiders, lizards and stuff. That's got to be one of the most disgusting things I can think of that I would. I don't want to see somebody getting bit by a spider.
Well, not only that, I mean, unless they know different people, just like a bee sting. I mean, we both are. You could get 20 people in a room and say, "Let's get it stung by bees," and 19 of them sit there and say, "Ouch!" and the you know, the 20th drop dead. You know,
I'm sure the History Channel has a lot of medics on the back.
I'm sure they do.
I don't understand the lot. You know, I don't see the joy in watching that kind of television programming. Can you imagine? It's coming up in November, I guess. You know, for sweeps. Let's go to the phones. Oop, the phones just stopped ringing. I went too long. 1-800-966-1039. Like, give us a call. We're ready for your calls now. And text 601-207-4478 if you'd like to call.
That seems to be a very strange type of a show to allow yourself to
I know. Well, you know, they is pandering to weird base instincts.
Well,
I
guess, but you know, is it to see what the physical reaction of the person is?
Well, that was the show. What happens to you.
Yeah,
I'm
exactly.
Not sure I'm going to let a Gila monster chomp down on my arm.
I know.
That's not my idea of a good time.
Right. Plus, you know, I mean, they're venomous too. So
yeah.
So any of that stuff.
Yeah, we got a caller here. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
morning. I had a question for Jim. You know, when I was a kid, we, or the farmers, always burned their hay fields and burned their leaves, and everybody burned their leaves. It seemed like that did away with a lot of places where ticks would live and breed, you know, under the old hay that's laying down now and all the leaves that gather in the, on the edge of properties. Did that help? When we stopped doing that, did that help the spread of ticks, or is there any evidence of that?
Well, I'm not sure there's direct evidence that said that that's helped, but certainly it hasn't hurt the tick itself, because as you pointed out, you rake all that stuff up into a pile and burn it, you're gonna kill everything. Leaving it sit there, it's a perfect place, because that's where ticks spend their time, especially, as you pointed out, at the interface of some wooded areas and grassy areas. And when you got that leaf, duff, as we call it, sitting there, that's where the ticks have a tendency to stay, especially during the heat of the day. And as the weather gets cold like it is now, they crawl down there and up and down, depending on the weather. So it probably certainly helped keep the population at bay, especially in areas where you might have had small populations. Mm-hmm. So, yep.
All okay. right. Thank you.
Thank yep. you. Bye-bye. So ticks like to be in moist environments.
Yeah, the deer tick really needs about an 80% humidity. If it gets much, really? If it gets much drier than that, it actually dries them out and kills them.
Mm-hmm.
We've actually, one of the guys that works with me is looking at gradients during the day, and actually measuring them and looking at it to see, you know, can we predict at least to a point that says, oh, geez, you know, today between 3 and 7 today, it's going to be really dry. And, you know, if you're going to be out about, that's probably a good time.
Mm.
Or the flip side of that is, oh, gee, the humidity is supposed to be, you know, 80-plus degrees in this area during that time period. You ought to stay away from those areas because the ticks will be more active.
So the deer tick, is that a southern critter? I mean, do they have the? I don't.
Well, it's southern from the standpoint of outside of Maine. Yes, you know.
Like in Florida, do they deal with deer tick?
Yeah, they have. Not as much. They have other ones closely related, but the deer tick is kind of, you know, spread across the U.S.
What about the Lyme disease? Then?
Well, see, Lyme disease, as you well know, was named after Lyme, Connecticut.
Mm.
So, you know, the deer tick has been in Massachusetts for a long, long time, but we just didn't have it here for whatever reasons that it never made it up this far.
So if we go south of Lyme, Connecticut.
Yep.
You still have it in the intensive way that we see it here in Maine?
It's more intense along the northern part of the country and across the country, and then when you get out to the west coast, you have the deer tick is also called the black-legged tick.
Mm-hmm.
You get out to the west coast, you have a very closely related species, which is the Pacific black-legged tick.
Mm-hmm.
So it does basically the same thing out there, you know, has the same organisms and that type of thing, but it is a different species of tick, but just very, very closely related.
Mm-hmm.
But again, and that's why I think it's been slow to have a lot of vaccines or other things created for, like, with Lyme disease, because it was a small part of the U.S. that really had problems with it for a long time. But it is spreading. It's spreading southward as well as across the north, too. Mm-hmm. So, okay. Yep.
If we should mention, we have in years gone by, or in the past year, I guess last spring, you have a lab in Orono.
We do.
To test these.
Yep, yep. We have a brand new lab. It opened April 1st. We opened the doors for the first tick. And to date, we've had just around 2,000 ticks sent into our lab, which is just amazing. I mean, we had a small identification lab for the previous 3 or 4 years. You know, we'd get 200 or 300 ticks a year sent into it.
Mm.
But since this has been open, and it's just basically word of mouth and that type of thing, we've had about 2,000 specimens sent in. Of those 2,000, probably about 1,500 of them have been deer ticks and have been tested.
Mm-hmm.
So
of the 1,500, what percentage are you seeing with Lyme disease?
I off the top of my head, I can't give you the exact number, but I'm going to say it's somewhere in the 35% range, give mm-hmm. or take.
Okay.
And then under 10% for both anaplasmosis and babesiosis, which is the other two disease organisms we're testing for. And then the fourth thing that we look at is co-infections, meaning does that tick have more than one of those organisms? And that's about 5% of them have at least one or more, have two or more of the organisms in them. So, you know, it's either a double or triple threat.
Oh, boy.
So, yeah, that's wonderful. That's the problem with them. You know, you get bitten by them and wham, you can get more than one thing.
Mm-hmm.
And with the situation on these, the good thing, quote, if there is a good thing, they're all treatable by antibiotics, those particular diseases. The other disease that they transmit here is a viral disease called Powassan virus, or some people call it deer tick fever, which is probably a very closely related virus that is transmitted by the deer tick, or even more commonly transmitted by the woodchuck tick. But the woodchuck tick, luckily for us, we don't come in contact with very often.
Mm.
So the bottom line there is, though, that, you know, of course it's a virus, so antibiotics do nothing for it. And that's a pretty nasty disease. That's the lady that died here in, I think, 2013. That's what she had from a tick bite.
Phone number is 1-800-966-1039. We got text line 601-207-4478. No text yet. I'm impressed. the ladybug / Japanese lady beetle season.
Right.
Is upon us.
Right. Yeah, they start, once the weather starts getting cold, you know, sometime late September, early October usually, you'll see them. If you've got a light-colored house, and if you look at the southern exposure of that house, and you got a nice grassy area, or I should say in this case a tree area, where there's a lot of maybe possibly aphids, because they are a predator and they feed on aphids, they'll actually come and they'll sit on that side of the house where it's kind of nice and warm and sunny.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually what they're trying to find is a crack or a crevice or a little tiny hole where they can come in and spend the winter. And I mean, we have people call us that literally have hundreds, and some even have thousands, that get into especially older homes that aren't as tight as a newer home is, and they're really flooded with lady beetles. And and I mean, it's a nuisance. They're smelly. If you if you crush them, or if you just pin them and try to get them out, as most lady beetles, if you ever remember playing with one or crushing one, they have that yellowish fluid in them, and they can release that fluid, and it's just kind of smelly. So they are smelly, and but just, you know, if you walk into a room and you got, you know, 100 ladybugs crawling on the wall, you know, it's not a very good experience for most people. and the same with cluster flies. They do the same type of thing this time of year, you know, late September, early October. Again, they're sitting on the side. Now, the other ones, when I mentioned grassy areas, they're kind of an interesting critter, because the immature fly, in this case, which we would call a maggot, is parasitic on earthworms. So if you got a nice grassy area around your home, it's, again, older homes, you may have a great number of cluster flies getting into your house.
This particular thing has me thinking at times, not all the time, and I wouldn't do it. You know, paving is okay. I'll take the natural environment over paving, but I noticed where my shop used to be, it was all paved, and we had very few issues with insects.
Right.
Of course, it was all paved.
Right.
Where we are now is not bad, but it's not vegetated. I mean, it is on the peripheries, but it's not that bad. Over at my house at times, where it's a beautiful lawn, lots of earthworms. it's a whole other ballgame.
Yeah. So.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. It's 8:30. We come back, we'll take your calls at 1-800-966-1039, text line 601-207-4478. Stay with us. We'll be right back. All right, we are back. It's hour number two-thirds. One third. Anyway, we're into our second half hour here. It's Hot and Cold on Saturday morning. We've got Jim Dill with us. We're talking about insects, bugs, and pests in general. Our phone number is 1-800-966-1039. Text line 601-207-4478. Just want to mention my friend Alan over at General Appliance and Brewer on Center Street, open 9 to 4 Monday through Friday. If you're looking for appliance parts or service, give Alan a call at 989-4341. That's 989-4341. The time of year where you might be thinking about, well, you know, the power is going to go out, and what do I have for backup heat? Well, you could get an Empire heater that doesn't use electricity. It runs on propane, and Alan sells them, and he services them. What more do you need to know other than 989-4341? You need to know 1-800-966-1039 to talk to Jim on Saturday morning. Jim, the bed bug situation in the state of Maine, we won't talk about other places, better, worse, the same?
You know, the bed bug population seems to be a constant. We always have them. We get calls on them. I've had in the last month two or three calls. So we always get them. But I think what happens is it's more like almost the bug du jour. And I think that what has happened with the whole tick issue, because 5 years ago when I was in here, the whole show would be about bed bugs.
Yeah.
And we'd hardly even mention ticks. And now it's the other way around. It's ticks. Everybody's concerned with ticks. So things can change so dramatically.
Yeah.
And I mean, I can remember sitting here almost, you know, a 2-hour show, we'd be getting bed bug calls.
Yeah.
And no one would ever mention a tick.
Yeah.
And now it's the other way around. So we still have plenty of bed bugs.
Okay. We've got a call in line too. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Good morning, Dave from Bradley.
Hey.
I'm curious, of these other diseases besides Lyme, about the time my son came down with Lyme, I got sick. I've been sick about ever since with something coming and going. And what are some of these symptoms? And the other thing is, I'm wondering, I've been told that the possibility if somebody has Lyme and a mosquito bites them and then bites you, they could or could not transfer enough organisms to give you Lyme disease as well.
First, I'll take the last question. Mosquitoes are not a vector of Lyme disease. It's strictly going to be a tick, and right now it's the deer tick that transmits that organism here in the state of Maine. So if a tick bit you and then bit another person, could they transmit it? Possibly, but the way ticks usually do, a tick will get on, and especially an adult tick, let's say in this case, will get on, and it does just one feeding. It feeds completely, drops off, and then it doesn't feed another. As an adult, it certainly doesn't feed a second time. The question about what are the symptoms of the other diseases, Lyme, anaplasmosis, and babesiosis, all pretty much the same. You know, it's high. It can be a high fever, flu-like symptoms, and that type of thing. I always tell people, especially during the warm months, during the summer and that type of thing, if you think you've got the cold or a flu, I would definitely, you know, see the doctor. Because of chances are the possibility are that at least that's something that you could have gotten from a tick bite. And right now we're dealing with, especially outside of the state of Maine, is West Nile virus and Triple E, Eastern Equine Encephalitis, which are transmitted by mosquitoes. Now, as for those other ones being chronic, I've not seen anything where babesiosis or anaplasmosis are more of a chronic type of a disease. It's pretty acute. Once you get it, you're miserable and you know it, and they would treat you with antibiotics and that would do the trick. Lyme is a much more different organism. It's a spirochete. And it's more difficult to necessarily to control it. Some people don't believe that there's such a thing as chronic Lyme disease, some doctors. So there's, you know, a lot of things out there. I'm not a medical doctor, so I really don't want to go too far down this line of questioning. These are all questions that should be asked of, like, people at CDC or your local physician. But, you know, that's kind of where it is.
Yeah, okay, that's helpful. Thank you.
Yeah,
okay. Thanks, Dave. See you. Our phone number is 1-800-966-1039 to text line. We have no text this morning. I find this hard to believe. All the shy people out there are otherwise occupied. 601-207-4478. So I have to ask you a question. This question was put forth to me. What's a cootie? Is that, would that be considered lice?
Lice.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. And then growing up, there was a game of cooties.
That's right.
And I'm sure it's probably still around.
That wasn't like a lice, though. That was more like a centipede, wasn't it?
No, actually, if I remember, the cootie was just kind of, to me, looked more like, as I look back on it, looked more like a grasshopper because it would have a head and a couple of antennae, six legs. You had to put it together.
This is why people tune in to Hot and Cold, is to learn these important things on Saturday morning.
Right. But there's also a game called Bedbugs, too.
Oh boy!
Yeah. It was a plastic. I actually have it because I.
Of course
I,
you do.
I use it as when I give bed bug talks. That, yeah. You know, here you go. I mean, you know, at one time, you know, people thought that this was you know, a fun thing to make fun of. And the thing was with bed bugs, I think. There's a real stigma attached to it that if you got bed bugs, you know, you're dirty, filthy, oh, terrible, you know. And that's not the case. You can go to a 5-star hotel and stay there, and there can be bed bugs there. Or you can go to a very low-grade place, and there could be bed bugs there too. Mm. Bed bugs are not very discriminatory when it comes to a meal. Are going to
are there any place. Natural predators?
Not really, and part of the reason is where they are, because they're in the house. Mm-hmm. So if you think about it, sure, you know, if you got a spider that would come across something or another predatory insect that happened to be in the house, would they eat a bed bug? Sure, but are they there seeking out bed bugs? No. You know, and then some people would say maybe the cure is worse than the problem. You know, if you have to release 1,000 spiders in your house.
Well, I was just thinking of chickens. It just came to me because people say they eat ticks. Maybe you have chickens in your bedroom and it takes care of the other problems.
It's interesting that you say that because besides bed bugs in a house, bed bugs can be a serious problem in chicken houses.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
You know, I've seen pictures literally where there's thousands of bed bugs in, you know, caged laying houses. Okay. So yeah, they can. So they can. And the other thing is, we always tell people if you get what you think is a bed bug, to send it in and have it identified because there's a swallow bug and bat bugs and two or three other bugs that all look very, very similar to a bed bug. And you have to look at it under a microscope, really, to be able to tell the difference. Mm. And the thing is, it's completely different treatment. If you had a swallow bug in your house, chances are you had some swallows nesting outside. And when the young birds fledged, you know, all of a sudden the swallow bug has no meal, so it starts crawling around looking for a new meal. Sure. It would it bite a person? Yes, it could, but it's not going to cohabitate with you like the bed bugs do. So if you were bitten by this thing and you found it and you said, oh my gosh, I have bed bugs, all of a sudden you send it in and the treatment is like, hey, they're going to go away on their own.
Yeah.
So you don't have to spend $2,000, $3,000 to have somebody come in and exterminate the critter.
Okay. Got a text here. So if there aren't common predators of bed bugs and the bed slash house has only been around for a few hundred years, is the bed bug a fairly new in respect to the age of the earth or civilizations, or were they here before people? Put on your hat and prognosticate on that one.
Well, bed bugs don't feed exclusively on humans.
Okay. Well, you just said they chickens.
Well, the chickens, but if you actually have them in your house, we've seen instances where cats, dogs, they'll be around, you know, like if the dog has a bed over in the corner, sometimes you'll find, you know, that some bed bugs can be concentrated there too because they can feed on the dog. Mm. I actually had one case where the people had a pet rabbit in their house, you know, and had it in their cage, and the poor thing was a regular stopping point for bed bugs that, you know, they would. So they feed on other critters besides just humans, but I think over time with humans and the way humans have built our civilization, the bed bugs have adapted to, you know, go right along with us.
I've got a text here from Kim in Belfast. Conifer bugs are now moving in droves. Again, pine trees.
Yeah, this is the time of year where you're going to find the western conifer seed bug. Mm-hmm. You know, those kind of gangly, if you're not familiar with them, they're about 3/4 of an inch long, brown, kind of long, gangly legs, you know, kind of awkward when they're moving almost. Mm. And they do. Pine, if you have a lot of pines, especially if you have a house that big pines kind of over your home, and it's an older home where there's good means of entrance to your house, it could easily have lots of western conifer seed bug, who, as the name implies, feeds on the seeds of conifers. In our case, the white pine is a good host for this insect, as you know, some other conifers also, but the pine is. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, they're moving in this time of year. There's really not a lot to do about them. You know, if you see them, you know, throw it back outside, kill it, do whatever you want with it. And the only way to keep them out is to shore up your house. You know, find those cracks and crevices and make it as tight as possible.
Which you should be doing anyway if you're listening to this radio program.
Exactly. So, yeah, absolutely. So you get a double, you know.
Double benefit.
Double benefit from it, right. You're shoring up the house, helping with the heat and coolness, and also keeping the bugs out.
Yep. Ground wasps, common here, ground wasp problem seems to be over. I trapped many hundreds. It was awesome. No poison.
Yes.
Brown wasp, are we talking about yellow jackets?
Or what, well, I'm guessing they're probably, from the sounds, I'm going to say they're talking about solitary bees. Mm-hmm. And solitary bees are a little smaller than a honeybee, and as the name implies, they are solitary, and they build these little holes in the ground, especially sandy areas. And we get a lot of calls on those. I mean, there literally can be hundreds of bees nesting on a sandy soil, or, mm-hmm. you know, near a house or whatever. And what they do is they just build a little hole, put a little hole in the ground and excavate it, and they lay their eggs in there and they provision it. Mm-hmm. And as the larvae feed on what they've provisioned with it, you know, nectar or pollen, I should say, or whatever else they may use, depending on the species, that's what you see. And when she says, you know, no pesticides were necessary, is it not a very aggressive insect? I mean, you could actually walk across, you know, an area that's got 100 of them, and they wouldn't come after you or anything. Hmm. So they're a very docile bee. And as she said, they're gone, and that's because they're there during the summer, and now the new bees that hatched at this time of year and have gone out, they've gone to look for places to overwinter. So that next year they can start the life cycle all over again.
I got to show you a text.
Yep. Yep. The cootie game.
Cootie game.
Yep.
All right.
Yep. Absolutely.
Our phone number is 1-800 1-800-966-1039. Text 601-207-4478. So ants, we touched on ants earlier. Anything different? Is there any? I don't want to say seasonality to it, but do we have populations that kind of wax and wane over the years? You know, some years we got a really good ant year versus for maybe carpenter ants versus crazy ants or some other.
No, and I think because of where ants are, they're pretty stable. Mm-hmm. And they're just like bees. They're in the same family as bees, called Hymenoptera. Mm-hmm. They have queens, and they have huge colonies, workers, etc. And then the reproductives leave the nest and go form other nests, you know, in the springtime or in the summertime. And one of the newer problems that I would call newer, we've had it for years, but it's called the European red ant. Some people call it the European fire ant here in the state of Maine. And an interesting thing about it, I'll get to in a second, but they bite and sting. But they're very tiny, small ant, less than a quarter of an inch long or maybe a quarter of an inch long. But the interesting thing about them is their colonies can spread across acres. So you could have what looks like a nest in your yard, you know, and you see a little, you know, activity, a little mound or something, and that could just be part of, you know, neighbors and another neighbor, and it can cover acres, one colony underground. So when you think of things like that, and then, of course, other ones are smaller, but most of their activity, a lot of the ants' activity are underground, with the exception of carpenter ants. So seasonality doesn't really impact them so much. Weather and other conditions don't seem to impact them necessarily as much. And, you know, the only thing I say about ants is when you find them crawling around in your house, they're usually there earlier before the weather's nice outside. If they got a colony like next to your foundation or underneath your slab or whatever, unfortunately, they come into the house to forage. And we get calls all the time saying, I've got this, you know, ant problem. They're crawling all over the place, and you know, we discuss things with them. And then 2 weeks later, they call and say, "Oh, they're all gone." So it must have worked. Well, whatever they did didn't work. Probably it's just now that the weather has turned warm enough outside, so that whole colony and all the other ants are foraging outside for food, not in your house.
Mm. Okay, we got a whole bunch of texts just came in. First one, I had a problem with ground nesting yellow jackets this year. Very aggressive.
Yeah. Yellow jackets, of course, are a very aggressive species. And ground nesting, usually what yellow jackets do, they're opportunistic, sort of like bumblebees are too, that nest in the ground. They'll find an old mouse hole or whatever. Mm-hmm. And dry years usually are years where you have a lot more ground nesting yellow jacket survival, because if you think about it, if you have a very wet year, those can get flooded out,
sure,
those holes. So in dry years, we find that they're much more aggressive. You know, and very truthfully, what I have done and told people to do in the past, if they know where the nest is, the hole, I suggest you go out about midnight when it's fairly cool and be prepared with two people, one with a flashlight and one with a shovel full of soil, and you walk up to that nest, flash right at the hole, and then you just throw a shovel full of dirt right over the end of that hole. And then just take off, and then the next day you can come back, and they haven't been able to dig their way out through. And at nighttime, most likely they're all inside that nest there, because they're not nighttime foragers. So you've taken care of the nest. Then I just say throw a couple more shovelfuls of dirt over it, and most likely you will have taken care of that nest,
okay,
without any pesticides.
All right, another one here. Will a tick always climb up when it gets on your skin? Say it climbs up your pants and gets on your skin at the belt line.
What they do is basically they're climbing to find some type of skin. So if they get on you, they just seem to climb up. Can they climb down? Yeah, they probably can, but most likely when they get on you, they just start climbing up, and I don't know the reason
for
that.
Are they sensing area where there's good blood flow as well, temperature-wise maybe?
Not necessarily. They do like moisture areas sometimes, so mm-hmm. We get a lot of people that will tell us they get them in their armpits.
Mm-hmm.
They'll get them along the waist, and probably along the waist is more because you've got a tight-fitting, you know, shirt and belt. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a protected area for the tick. And, of course, we get a lot in the hairline. And part of the reason is the first place that they come to, if you got it on your ankle and it's climbing up the clothing, the first place it hits skin is, you know, the hairline.
Okay.
So I'm not sure that they're necessarily climbing up for any special reason, but they just start moving around looking for, a patch of skin to burrow into, or bite into, I should say.
Okay.
They do not burrow.
Okay. Good. That gives me a little, makes me feel slightly better. excuse me. We're going to take a break. It's 8:55 here. We still have another hour to go. We've got text messages to answer, and we'll be back in a bit. Stay with us. Hot and cold. Okay, we're back. It's 9:06, I'm sorry, here at the Voice of Maine. We got Jim Dill with us. In honor of Jim's presence, this is a song by Red Norvo from 1936 called Bughouse.
Well, there we go.
Yeah. And we're here talking with Jim about bugs. And I should mention, you're more than just a bug guy, Jim. You work at Cooperative Extension Pest Management. So pests can be things other than insects.
It is. I mean, my degree happens to be in entomology, but we get wildlife calls, you know, everything from, you know, mice to deer.
Yeah.
All kinds of different arthropods, as we talk about here, you know, when you talk ticks and other things. We actually have, a plant pathologist that works with this. So we talk about plant diseases. Mm-hmm. So you're right. It's the pest management office or pest management unit. So anything is kind of game. You know, I get calls on snakes and, so a little bit of everything we do. Yep. But we specialize, if you would, in insects.
I've been slightly paranoid since our time together over these years. One day I came home from work. I have a deck on the side of the house where the door is that I go in. And I came around the corner, and there's a deer standing there looking at me, you know, maybe 4 feet from the deck. So, of course, I got to talk to the deer because the door, hello, how are you? And it stood there and just watched me.
Yeah.
And I thought, okay, how many ticks is it dropping as it stands here talking to old Tom? it then left. So yeah. I felt relieved and hope that it's not full of ticks, but it probably is. Right. Let's see. We got the climbing tick thing. We've got that. Okay. Ticks are attracted to the color yellow or just a coincidence? A colleague's yellow Mustang had dozens on it and on several occasions.
Must be just where it parks his car, because if you think about it, ticks don't move very far.
Mm.
Mostly just up and down.
Yeah.
Once they're situated, they pretty well stay within a very short distance. So they don't seek out a color. As a matter of fact, ticks don't have eyes.
Oh.
They have sensors, so they can sense light and that type of thing. But you can get ticks at night just as you can during the day. No, they're not attracted to the.
I would park my car in a different place covered with ticks.
I would suggest the same thing. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of unusual that they'd be climbing up a car, but yeah. It must be just
maybe
they
like Mustangs.
Yeah, maybe so. It must be just where it's parked.
Yeah, permethrin on the house killed hundreds of conifer seed bugs.
Yes, one of the recommendations is if. You do have a problem with either cluster flies, the Asian lady beetle, or Western conifer seed bug, is to spray the outside of the house with a permethrin, a resmethrin, or one of the labeled products that has a synthetic pyrethrin in it. Works very well, especially if you spray the south side of the house. That's usually where they seem to concentrate. Mm-hmm. But, certainly spraying the outside of the house does take care of all that stuff.
Okay. Let's see. We got a call on line one. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Morning. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. I've got my full-size shop back, of course, but I've also got a little miniature one, and
yep.
That is my go-to bug buster. we can suck up the ladybugs in the house and then go outside, let them go, or I go in my garden and suck up beetles and anything like that. So it's a good little machine.
Good. Good to hear. Thank you.
And that's truly one of the things that we recommend to people, especially in the house. You know, just take your vacuum cleaner and, you know, suck up the Western conifer seed bug or whatever.
Mm.
The only problem is if it's your regular vacuum cleaner, it can get kind of messy inside, you know, because sometimes, as I think we talked off the air, the ladybugs especially, and actually the Western conifer seed bug too, releases a chemical that is quite smelly.
Mm.
The ladybugs is kind of a yellow body fluid, hemolymph, that they release, and it's smelly. So if you're sucking in 100 of them inside your vacuum cleaner and they're all releasing you know, a drop of liquid in there that's smelly. It could get pretty gummy and gooey inside of
the
vacuum.
Well, maybe the thing is we need, and I'll put this on your plate, Jim, because this is the million-dollar idea. Maybe there is a market for the juice of ladybugs that we could, I mean, I would be a wealthy man right
you,
now.
You would be.
Yeah.
I can see Tom out there now.
With the vacuum.
Milking ladybugs is what you'd have
No, what we're going to get is a press, you know,
like an oil press.
Yeah, oil press or and make a ladybug juice.
Well, maybe. Maybe there's a... I mean, the movie Beetlejuice. You could have bug juice, which
that's
you know,
right.
So,
that's oh man, juice. This is an opportunity right there. I worry about killing them. The stink attracting more bugs. Now I look at it the other way. I think the stink is like the mafia. You know, you're gonna you want this to happen to you. Look what happened to your buddy over here.
I don't believe that the smell that they release would attract them. Usually. They release it because they've been disturbed. And so most chemicals like that, if they're released, it's more of a wanting to other ones to stay away. The exception sometimes are with bees, and once they sting and they release a pheromone that does help other bees come to defend like a colony or something.
Okay.
So, but with the ladybugs and the Western conifer seed bug, I would expect it's more of a wanting to disperse rather than
so my,
to
So my mafia
accommodate.
Metaphor works
that's
in this
right,
case.
That's right,
exactly. Ah, see? Okay.
Yeah.
They watch all those mafia movies, it's finally paying off.
Paying off, yeah. You can just spray it around and keep them all away.
Is spraying the property for ticks effective?
It depends on what you spray with. It does help. As a matter of fact, it can help quite a bit. We have people that spray their properties regularly that has had problems in the past. And unfortunately, there's not a good organic control. At one time, there were some essential oils that was out there. I think it was rosemary oil. And the formulation that they had worked quite well. And they took it off the market for some reason, and other formulations of rosemary oil didn't work as well from the tests that I've seen. So I'm guessing that maybe there must have been some other additives in the original one, so it wasn't, and maybe the reason why they took it off because it wasn't purely organic. But the material of choice is called bifenthrin, which we're back to our synthetic pyrethrins, that works very, very well. For control of ticks around a property. And you just got to make sure that you got a lot of pressure with it and, you know, it mix up the leaves of the duff and that type of thing. So usually we recommend that you have a professional come in and do it because they come in and blast it with high-pressure sprayers, which is something the homeowner probably doesn't have to be able to do.
Okay. Let's see. I had a can of permethrin that sat over the winter. I later sprayed it directly on a tick. It didn't seem to bother the tick at all. Does that tick spray go bad with age or through cold?
Through the cold, it probably wouldn't have. When you say you had it now, sometimes what will happen is with materials like that, if they freeze, it actually separates. So the carriers in it separate from the chemical. So what may have happened, and I don't know, and I would just speculate in this case, that maybe when you went to spray, all you were spraying out were the inert ingredients and the carriers and that type of thing, and the actual active ingredient had settled out because of the cold and freezing, and that's why it may not have worked. Also, these materials in a can, if it's a spray can, they should last a fairly long time, but even the synthetic pyrethrins have a half-life of just a matter of days. So, but in a can like that, they it's not like it's exposed to light and other materials and microorganisms. So in a can, it should last for 2 or 3 years. So my guess is the cold may have done something to it if it didn't work.
All right, we're going to take a break. It's 9:15. It's Voice of Maine. It's hot and cold, and Jim's here. We'll be back in a bit. Talk more about bugs. Okay, we're back. It is 9:19 here on the Voice of Maine. It's hot and cold Saturday morning with Jim Dill, talking about bugs, pests, and things that will want to basically extract blood from your body.
And I guess at this time you would be bump in the night too, right?
Yep. Yeah.
Things that go bump in the night.
Oh, man. So, and I have to comment on Jim does a lot of other things besides that. He is a state legislator.
Yep.
Every year when the Kiwanis have their big auction, the guy front and center is Jim Dill.
Yep,
I get a big kick out of him. And part of it is lethargy, and part of it is common sense that I don't go to this auction because yes. I know I would come back with so much stuff.
Yes, you would.
That it would hurt.
It would. I'm sure you would.
But yes. It's for a good cause, and I will one of these years. When I think the timing is right.
Right.
Anyway, our phone number is 1-800-966-1039. A text line is 601-207-4478. Could you please explain the half-life of synthetic permethrin again?
Yeah. When we talk about a half-life, what that means is technically how long it takes for half of that compound to break down. So we'll start with the simple one, which is actually the actual ingredient pyrethrin, which is a naturally occurring material in chrysanthemums. And when that is out and sprayed in the environment, the half-life of it is a matter of hours usually. And what that means that is if you put a pound of it out there in, and we'll say the half-life is 10 hours, 10 hours from that, you'd only be able to recover half of that. So you'd only be able to recover a half a pound. Another 10 hours, you'd only be able to recover a quarter of a pound. So basically what happens is in a matter of a couple days, that material is completely gone. So let's go way back to DDT. The half-life of DDT was measured in years. So if you put a pound of DDT out there today, mm-hmm. you could go and capture that pound for years. It would be several years before it would be broken down and there'd only be a half a pound out there. Another matter of years before there'd be a, you know, only a quarter. It's just a very different type of material. Mm-hmm. And that's what a half-life is. It depends. It's how long it takes half of the material to degrade in the environment.
And the intent in wanting to have a relatively expedient half-life is the fact that it's less likely to get into the food chain and into people and cause a lot of disruptions.
Right. We used to think the best thing was persistence because you throw DDT out there, you spray it this year, and you don't have to worry about it. But the problem was you sprayed it this year, and then next year you put your garden back in and you sprayed it again next year and then the next year. So that's why it really, really built up in the environment. Mm. So, yeah, you want – for the most part, we want a fairly short life of the material. So when I talked about the permethrins, the naturally occurring compound is a very short half-life. What they have done to help the material be a little better, quote, is they've synthesized it, and by changing the formulation of the molecule arrangement a little bit, they've added life to it. So instead of a matter of hours of a half-life, it is now a matter of days. Mm-hmm. So it just lasts longer, same idea, quick knockdown, same type of mode of action on the insect, but it just lasts long. It's a little more persistent.
And in terms of human toxicity, is permethrin benign?
Is a low mammalian toxicity, okay. Yes.
Whereas DDT was?
Was actually very low mammalian toxicity.
Really?
Yes. Our problem with DDT was like eggshell thinning and persistence in overall. As a matter of fact, during World War II, the GIs were actually given DDT to sprinkle on their body for life.
So this is why, as a kid, you would run behind the sprayer for mosquitoes,
mosquito
and we all aren't laden with cancer, at least from that.
You didn't drop dead or anything because the mammalian toxicity of DDT was very low as far as acute effects and. But as I say, the eggshell thinning and some other problems of persistence was the main reasons that DDT went out.
Yeah, if you're putting it out every year.
You can still find DDT in the environment quite regularly.
Really?
So, and it went out in 72 or something like that. Mm-hmm. So
what is the half-life of DDT? When you say years, do you know?
I don't know off the top of my head what it was, but
I can look it up.
You can look it up. What's the half-life of
DDT? I have this computer in front of me.
Right.
I could do this.
Right.
The phone number in the meantime is 1-800-966-1039 as I try to type in half-life DDT while there we go. Persistent soil half-life of DDT is 2 to 15 years. Wow. Half-life of DDT in an aquatic environment is, you ready for this, 150 years. Wow.
So that's why you can still find it everywhere.
Yeah. So that's the gift that keeps on giving. You don't have to spray DDT anymore. It's going to be here for another 130 years in the ocean or wherever.
Well, we'll probably never get rid of it completely.
Yeah.
I mean, because, you know, there's so much of it out there.
Okay. Is it true that cedar chips can prevent ticks if spread around your house and yard?
Cedar and cedar oil is one of the essential oils that is repellent to insects. I haven't seen any research on cedar chips as being a actual repellent for ticks. I think the situation is that, you know, where ticks are found, you know, if you spread them around your home and yard, that's not really where you usually find ticks. Mm. As soon as I say that, people say, well, I get them in my yard all the time. This is true, but where you get them is along the edges of the woods and the taller grass or plantings that you might have, barberry plantings or things like that, especially where rodents may be congregating. Mm. If you spread them around those areas, it may help. But it also may just end up giving them a more of a hiding place. Because, as I say, I have not seen any research on that, so I really can't answer on cedar oil and how well it works on ticks.
Okay. We're going to head over to line three for the entertainment part of our program. This is my son, Pete. Pete, say good morning to Jim Dill.
Good morning, Jim Dill. I'm glad you're on finally.
Good morning, Pete. How are you?
I've got I don't know if you've touched on this already because I haven't listened to the first hour of the show. Have you talked about the apocalypse?
No.
Okay. Now, don't pretend like you don't know what I'm talking about here.
I have no clue.
I have read that scientists don't know how many ants there are, and that they estimate there'd be up to 1 million ants for every man, woman, and child on the planet.
Well, certainly ant colonies, one of the things we did touch upon was the European red ant. And as I was saying earlier, that one colony here in the state of Maine can cover acres. And these are tiny ants, so an ant colony that covers several acres certainly is going to have millions or could have millions of ants in it. So I don't know if that's a fact and who estimated that, but certainly there are a lot of insects in the world and there are certainly lots of ants.
I read it online, so I figure it must be true.
Must be true if you read it online, right.
I know. It's unsettling that there are that many ants. I'm not saying we should get rid of all the ants. I understand they're part of the ecosystem, but I really think we ought to get some kind of population control thing going on, like they've got in Florida with the boa constrictors.
That's right. Well, maybe just a birth control for ants might work. So
there's another million-dollar idea.
Another million idea.
Like a lottery. If the ants want to have kids, they got to get a permit.
There you go.
Just like China. Only one child. One child per ant.
What's going on?
That's about it. We're talking about bugs, Pete. So what? Tell me something great about cars today.
Great about cars today. I've got a 2007 Silverado out there, right?
Yeah.
It's got like 150K. It's a quad cab. That's the one with the four doors.
Yeah.
It's got a cap. It's got a bed liner. It's got new tires. It runs outstanding. Somebody should come buy that. What else have we got? I got like 10 cars out there right now. I got a nice 2010 Prius with I don't know how many miles, 140, 150. If you're budget minded, I've got a 2011 Prius with 234K. Needed nothing for a sticker. It's been outstanding maintained.
Let me just put this down. If you come in, you test drive the one with 140, you test drive the one with 234. You cannot tell the difference. That's the story of Priuses right there in a nutshell.
That is how Priuses work. And we're having a sales promotion right now. I don't know how many of you follow the Facebook page, but I run that and I come up with the sales promotions. The next person to purchase a car is going to get, for free, with purchase, a used window fan. Now, this window fan's only been used twice. I was trying to put it in like the top part of the window, but it wasn't like fitting correctly. So it's basically brand new. It's as close to a new window fan as you're going to get without dropping $18 of your hard-earned money. So if you come buy a car, you get that fan. And if you buy a car today, before Monday, I will autograph and write a personalized message to you on that window fan.
Okay. Well, Pete, I don't know how any human being could pass up that kind of opportunity. It just doesn't make... I think Jim is.
I'm thinking about coming down and buying a car.
He's going to just sell his car and get that kind of a deal. All right.
Well, yeah, I don't blame them at all. I'll let you guys keep talking about bugs. I got, you know who's coming this morning? I had a guy named Pat come in, and then right after that, I had another guy named Pat come in.
Okay, two Pats. That's a Pat answer. All right, Pete.
If I can get Nat and Matt in here, we'll be in good shape.
Okay, thanks, Pete. See ya.
All right.
Bye-bye. That's one of my offspring right there. And I got to hit the right button. There we go. So by the grace of God, it's 9:30. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll take more phone calls at 1-800-966-1039. It's hot and cold Saturday morning. Stay with us. Okay, no tea, just coffee. We're back. Jim Dill's with me this morning, and we're talking about bugs and pests. And the phone number is 1-800-966-1039. This song is reminding me when Dick and I were doing the show years ago, we were over on Hogan Road, and Jerry Evans had arranged with a guy who had a coffee shop to bring us coffee and stuff every Saturday morning. And Dick was just giddy. I mean, he would bring the best pastries we were gaining weight.
There you go.
It was, I mean, you know, you want to talk about having fun. First of all, I'm coffeed up, which is an experience to have Tom on coffee. But that was a good time. Anyway. Let's see. We got any texts? Oh, yes. Oh, my goodness. The permethrin texts just keep coming. one human with a blowtorch can kill millions of ants in like 5 minutes. Okay. Yeah. Let's see. What about permethrin-treated clothes that are said to last for months and multiple washings?
Yeah. If you buy the treated clothing, they have a special way of impregnating the permethrin into to the clothes, and it truly does last several washings. If you treat them yourself and let it dry, it will also last for a few washings, but not as many as the commercially prepared ones. And permethrin treated clothing seems to be probably the best tick repellent for humans and when they're out there walking around. Mm-hmm. That it actually does kill the tick. If a tick walks up, it gets enough and eventually will drop off. So that's the way that it acts. Whereas materials like DEET doesn't kill the tick. It just is it senses that it's not something that they should be crawling on and then they drop off. Or they just, as they're trying to get on you, if they get onto the skin or if they touch the skin, they don't grasp on because they do what is called questing, where they hang on with their back legs and wave their front two legs around. And anything that comes by that is kind of soft and fuzzy, they grab onto. So that's why they grab onto clothing or they grab onto animals as it goes by. Whereas if it's a material that's hard, meaning, you know, and I think of the surface of a car, if you brush by, they probably wouldn't grab onto it. Mm. But that's the way they find their host. It's not that they're running around. Even though there are some ticks, one of being the Lone Star tick, there's some research out there that shows that they will try to actually follow a host.
So, oh, that's nice.
So you know, you got all these different mechanisms of finding the host, but most ticks do it through questing.
Okay. Well, we got a call on line one. Let's go over there. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Yeah, good morning. Question for Jim. I have a place on the Midcoast, on a lake in the Midcoast, and we have had the problems with the brown-tailed moth caterpillar. And in around Memorial Day, they were at Armageddon level. And then I went to Cooperative Extension about it. I also went over to see Eleanor Groden on campus. And all of a sudden, I stopped seeing them. And her thought was that, well, because of the wet conditions, we'd gotten the fungus that killed them. And, I mean, they were gone, absolutely gone. And I haven't seen one since. However, somewhere around the middle of August and into the middle of September, there was still something up eating my oak leaves, and I have a lot of them. and, you know, little droppings all over the dock into the boats and so forth. And so my question is, but no sign of caterpillars or the hares or any of that. So is there something else that's doing that, or is it still them, or what else could be going on there?
Yeah, well, first thing, you're absolutely right. As bad as the brown-tail moth has been, especially along the coast, there was a fungus this year that came in and clobbered the population in certain areas on the coast. Not everywhere, and not so much inland, but it was due to weather conditions. And as a matter of fact, I know Ellie Groden went out and collected hundreds of cadavers of the caterpillar to collect the fungus so that they can do continued research on it and see if they can get it to a point where they may actually be able to release it to continue. So that did take out. Now, the unfortunate thing with oaks is it seems to be the host tree of everything. There's many different types of caterpillars that get in it. And my guess is that what you may have then have had is maybe one of the tussock moth caterpillars that would get in there. There's also called a shot hole borer, leaf borer. And that looks like someone had taken a shotgun and truly shot it, and all these little tiny holes are in it rather than large, ragged holes. That was very common this year. But anyway, there's several different species of especially caterpillars, some a little more secretive than others, but none of them that cause any real serious problems to humans, hence why even though you saw a lot of damage, you heard the maybe frass raining down or saw the little frass pellets, you didn't see the caterpillars. Yep. So it could have been one of many different things.
So with the brown tail fungus infection in the spring, am I likely to have less new ones?
That's the idea, that in that area. Now, of course, the unfortunate thing is the females are good flyers, so they can fly back in and lay their eggs. Mm-hmm. But I think what we're hoping for is the areas that the fungus took the brown tail out this year, at least next year, will not be either reinfested yet or very low levels. Now, that's not to say that it won't reinfest, but what we're hoping for, you know, most people probably don't hope for this, but I'm sure if you live in a brown tail moth area, you're going to hope for another wet, cold spring. And take it out, because that's what has happened with the brown tail moth in the past. It has built up, and then all of a sudden it's had a natural collapse, and then it goes again for years with just being at very low levels and not a problem. And so that's what we're kind of hoping. Yeah, that's what we're hoping for, that this will continue for a couple of years.
They disappeared. I went from seeing thousands to zero.
Yep. That's exactly, and that's what we like to hear, and that's what we want to hear. But that also gives us a material to work with for future, infestations. Yep.
Okay.
All right. Great.
Thank you. Bye bye. Well, that brings up a good question. All these several species of caterpillars that are, I guess I use the word toxic. They have the ability to cause skin conditions, at least.
Yep.
Which ones are we dealing with?
Those are called tussock moths. Mm-hmm. And the thing is with the tussock moth, not everybody's allergic to them. And they're big, fuzzy caterpillars. Like if you think of a woolly bear that you see out, that one, you know, you can handle, and no one seems to have any problems with it. The tussock moths are also very woolly caterpillars, but if you notice them, if you looked at them very closely at all, usually at the front and the back, they have two groups of hairs that kind of come up like at a Y, and those are called pencil hairs. And it's those pencil hairs that break off, and it's just an irritant. It'd be like brushing against a cactus plant and getting all the little bristles in you, and you'd get this, you know, little reaction. And that's what happens with them. And some are just more irritating than others, depending on the species.
So it would, to me, it just makes sense. If I see a woolly caterpillar, I'm not going to touch it.
Well,
I need to touch it for anything.
That's true, but kids just kind of like caterpillars, and you know, especially if they've played with woolly bears, because everybody, even little kids, know what woolly bears are.
Yeah.
And then the next thing you see, another woolly caterpillar, and oops, you've picked it up and it's crawling on your arm.
I don't recall my kids being too crazy back here. Maybe the boys weren't, the girls were.
Maybe it's my grandkids. Yeah, it's, you know,
I can't imagine why your grandkids would play with bugs.
I know.
It seems a very strange thing to me. I don't know.
Oh. Yeah, just a natural thing, I guess, with us.
I guess. that's it, and, you know, the career path kind of makes sense. I got it.
Right.
Our phone number is 1-800-966-1039. The text line is 601-207-4478. We still got 15 minutes left, more or less, to cover the bases.
Well, I think I would go back to one thing I think you and I were saying, Tom, before the show started, and that was about ticks and them not going away.
Mm.
You know, you jokingly said, you know, hey, boy, it's a growth career.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I guess it is, because right at the moment, I mean, there's lots of research that needs to be done on mainly management of ticks. But the whole everything around ticks, associated with ticks, there needs to be a lot more research on. So, and we're hoping now with this new lab to be able to do that. And I would put one small plug in for the lab that we do, as I also mentioned, we do test ticks for organisms. Disease-causing organisms. Right now it's $15, and we test for Lyme, anaplasmosis, and babesiosis, and next year we plan to start testing dog ticks for some of the diseases associated with them, although not in Maine. We don't have any in Maine yet, but this is kind of more of a surveillance thing, and sure. If people are interested in having dog ticks tested, we can do that too.
Okay. And boy, we loaded up the phones there all of a sudden. Let's see. I got to hit the right buttons here, don't I? There we go. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Good morning.
Hi.
Hi. I have a question about I believe it's a bee that builds their nests in little crevices using mud, and then they lay their eggs inside of that. I have an old Victorian house with ornate clapboards, and I find these little mud pockets in them. Can I spray something directly onto the house to deter them?
Well, I mean, you can if it's really a problem. Those are another one of those things, like where we talked to earlier about the solitary bee nesting in the ground. These are called mason bees, if they're the small ones. Then there is a larger one that's called a carpenter bee, but they're about the size of a bumblebee. But the mason bee, it does just exactly what you said. They find a little hole or a crack or a crevice, lay their eggs in there, provision the nest, then seal it up with mud, and then the larvae feeds on the provisions that were put in there. Depending on the species, it may be a little different. It could be actual insects that they put in there. So these guys are, you know, kind of good guys. So they catch little caterpillars and put in there too. And so anyway, bottom line is, yes, you could spray if you find it as a real serious problem. Otherwise, I'd just leave them alone, because as I say, they're not an aggressive bee. But if you need to spray, just like with any of the fall pests that we talked about, you know, a synthetic pyrethrin would work well on keeping them away.
Okay. No, I'll just clean up the mess after they're done.
Well, I mean, they really are beneficial, and I'm a little spoiled because I'm an entomologist, but they're kind of fun to watch, doing their thing. So, yeah.
Then I'll stop killing the larva.
Okay.
And, okay.
I have one other question about daddy long legs. It seemed like there was an inordinate amount of them this summer. Did you find that also, or is it just me?
I saw a lot around, but, you know, I didn't notice that there were any more than usual, so it may
and
just
they
been.
And they're beneficial also?
They are beneficial. The harvestmen, okay. The daddy long legs, they're also called harvestmen. Again, they're a predator, and they feed on insects and other things, so, yep.
All right. Yep. All right. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Let's see. Over to line one again. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Hey, Voice of Maine. Good morning. Let me turn my radio down. Sorry. Okay. I had a couple questions. We're having infestations of something called a spotted lantern fly, and they're actually in Pennsylvania moving slowly east, and I heard it's pretty bad fly as far as vegetation. And the other question is, can you address maybe if guinea hens versus ducks versus chickens would be better to have in your yard to help get rid of ticks? And I can take my answer off on the air. Thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'll start with the birds eating ticks, and all of those birds will eat ticks. Ducks maybe not as much as chickens and guinea hens, but there's not any real research that shows that if you have chickens or guinea hens, you have a lower tick population. And part of the reason is it's who finds who first, because ticks will get on birds just like they get on other animals. Even though, you know, birds are good groomers, they might get them off better than some other animals. So I haven't really seen anything that I would say, sure, you know, go ahead and do that and you're going to get rid of all your ticks. I just tell people that, hey, they're going to eat ticks when they come across them, so it certainly doesn't hurt to have those in your backyard. Spotted lanternfly is a Homoptera pest. It has piercing, sucking mouth parts. You're right, it's in Pennsylvania. It's kind of a striking insect. It's about an inch long, very serious pest on vegetation, and it is slowly moving northward. And, you know, we're just keeping an eye out for it. We don't have it here in Maine. I don't even think it's in New England yet. So, yeah.
Okay. And let's go over to line two. Good morning. You're on The Voice of Maine.
Good morning. I don't know if you've covered it, but the age-old farmer's tale about the height of bee/wasp nests and how much snow we're going to get. I just noticed one the other day in a tree. It was 30 feet up.
Oh, we are screwed now.
It was the size of a watermelon. So.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think it really has much bearing, because I'll be very honest, I found one just the other day also, you know, in bushes that were about 2 feet off the ground. Mm. So I think it's just a matter of where the queen actually found a nice place to make her nest. And what those usually are, they're either a bald-faced hornet or a yellow jacket. Yellow jackets sometimes are lower down, and the bald face is sometimes higher up. And the bald face hornet are the ones that are usually the striking nest that's about the size of a basketball. And oddly enough, or interestingly enough, they just last 1 year. So that after a few good frosts, there's nothing left in that nest, and it won't be reused next year. But there doesn't seem to be anything to the story of how high that is to how bad the wind is going to be. It's the same story around the woolly bear caterpillar, the size of the black band or the orange bands. I actually knew a gentleman here in Maine who was trying to look at that and see if there was any correlation, and he didn't find that there was really any correlation to the – I think it just depends on the species or, you know, the group, just like, you know, any other thing. So there doesn't seem to be any correlation on either of those two things.
Okay. Another call here. Good morning. You're on The Voice of Maine.
Good morning.
Morning.
I believe the reason why we have so many ticks is because we have a very unhealthy forest. Too much brush and not enough cedar trees, and we need to do something right away.
Certainly a lot of slash and, you know, material that gives a good place for, number one, rodents. If you've got good areas for rodents to thrive in, that's going to, you know, help the tick population. And, of course, the same thing goes for, you know, if you've got good coverage and good slash and lots of twigs and leaves on the ground, it's also a good hiding place for ticks. So both of those certainly can contribute to the tick population, and hence, you know, all the slash and debris along the woods that would give good hiding places for both rodents and ticks.
A text message came in, are stink bugs new to Maine?
Are stink bugs new to Maine? No. I mean, we've had stink bugs here basically forever. The Western conifer seed bug is new to Maine. It's been here 7 or 8 years, maybe. Mm-hmm. And hence the western part of it, it was a western species that I don't know how it got here. I don't know if it slowly moved here or if it was brought in on something else. But it is new to Maine, but the stink bugs aren't.
One last text here. Once a hornet's nest is empty, will it deter other wasps from coming to the area following season due to being territorial?
No, because it's an inactive nest and it doesn't seem to make any, because a lot of times, very truthfully, I think most of us will see in the eaves of our house there may be two or three nests. If you don't take the old one down, the next year there'll be another one right next to it or within a couple feet of it. So I don't see that there's anything due to the territory because, you know, if there was a nest there already that was active, then most likely there wouldn't be another active nest right next to it. But if it's an old nest, it doesn't deter a new nest.
Okay, and we're almost out of time. We want to mention that you guys have a website, and I think the easiest thing to do is maybe just Google Cooperative Extension Pest Management in Maine.
Our Maine ticks, too, if you want to just go right directly to the ticks.
Okay.
It'll take you right to there. It tells you how to send in a tick. Gives you everything you wanted to know and didn't want to know about ticks.
You guys grabbed the MaineTicks.com thing. That's a big moneymaker there, I'll tell you what.
No, it's an EDU site.
Oh, okay. All right. Oh, so it's MaineTicks.edu.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And if they want to get you guys on the phone, I think the easiest thing is just to go to the website
get
as well.
Get the website, too. Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Jim, I appreciate you taking the time to come in. It's always a pleasure. It's going too fast. These seasons are just bing, bing. Spring, fall.
Right. Yep. And no, they do. I enjoy coming in. I hope people find it useful and helpful. I get a lot of comments on it.
I know they do.
Yep.
Okay.
Great. Thank you.
Jim, thanks again. Take care now.
Bye.